2 Kings chapter 5, I'd ask you to turn there. We're going to be in the first part of 2 Kings 5 this morning. We want to get the Word of God in front of us. And so I'm going to begin by reading the first 10 verses, and I hope you'll follow along. 2 Kings 5, verses 1 through 10. Now Naaman, commander of the army of the king of Syria, was a great and honorable man in the eyes of his master, because by him the Lord had given victory to Syria. He was also a mighty man of valor, but a leper. And the Syrians had gone out on raids and had brought back captive a young girl from the land of Israel. She waited on Naaman's wife. Then she said to her mistress, "If only my master were with the prophet who is in Samaria, for he would heal him of his leprosy." And Naaman went in and told his master, saying, "Thus and thus said the girl who is from the land of Israel." Then the king of Syria said, "Go now, and I will send a letter to the king of Israel." So he departed and took with him 10 talents of silver, 6,000 shekels of gold, and 10 changes of clothing. Then he brought the letter to the king of Israel, which said, "Now be advised when this letter comes to you that I have sent Naaman my servant to you, that you may heal him of his leprosy." And it happened when the king of Syria read the letter that he tore his clothes and said, "Am I God to kill and make alive, that this man sends a man to me to heal him of his leprosy? Therefore, please consider and see how he seeks a quarrel with me." So it was when Elisha, the man of God, heard that the king of Israel had torn his clothes, that he sent to the king saying, "Why have you torn your clothes? Please let him come to me, and he shall know that there is a prophet in Israel." Then Naaman went with his horses and chariots, and he stood at the door of Elisha's house. And Elisha sent a messenger to him, saying, "Go and wash in the Jordan 7 times, and your flesh shall be restored to you, and you shall be clean." I've never been to the Jordan River, but I've read the accounts of people who have, and almost invariably, they all say the same thing. They will tell you that it is one of the muddiest rivers they've ever seen. I was reading one fellow who said, if you're going to get a drink from the Jordan, the first thing you do is to let all of the sediment settle out, and then you take the water and you boil it. That's how dirty the Jordan was. Its excessive muddiness is due to the fact that there is such a steep drop in the Jordan from the Sea of Galilee to the Dead Sea. There's a drop of over 600 feet. When I was at Machu Picchu, the lost city of the Incas, a few years ago, one of the things they point out to you is how they supplied water to this town that sat at the top of a mountain. Higher up on the mountain than the village, they found a spring, and they dug a channel from that spring down to the village. And that channel was engineered at just the right pitch to make sure the water didn't stop flowing and become stagnant, and to make sure the water didn't flow so fast that it didn't clean out the channel properly. But it was at the right pitch. I can't remember, 7 degrees, 17, somewhere in that area. That channel brought the water from the spring up on the mountain into the village so that every house in the lost village of the Incas had running water. Proper pressure. Well, the Jordan's not at the right degree of pitch. And because of that, it is a muddy river. And here in 2 Kings 5, a man is told to go and wash in that river. And he doesn't want to. He says, I didn't read this far, but he says, there's better water in Syria, where I already am, than you've got down there in Israel. And that's one thing I will agree with Naaman about, again, based on what I've read. Some of the best water in the Middle East is there in the vicinity of Damascus. People who have gone there talk about how clear, how crystal clear, how sparkling, how good it tastes, how enjoyable it is to bathe in it, is right there around Damascus. But Naaman gets down to Israel and he's told, if you're wanting to be cured, you're going to have to go and wash in the big muddy You're going to have to go and wash in the Jordan River. Now, there are three things I'd like to do with this text this morning. I'm just going to make 2 points. But to get to those points, I want to talk about Naaman, what we're told about Naaman here. Naaman is one of those illustrations of how wonderful the Bible is, because it not only shows us for who we are. If you want to see yourself for who you are, take a good hard look at Naaman. I mean, when you look at Naaman, you're looking into the mirror. And there's going to be things about him that he says, the way he thinks and such like, that is reflective of us. But even more, you're getting a good look at how God operates with us, how God deals with us. So in the story of Naaman, we see ourselves and we see God. And there are 2 simple points I'm wanting to make this morning. I'm not wanting to over-engineer this sermon. The 2 points are, number one, mighty oaks from little acorns grow. And number 2, there are some things that only God can fix. Mighty oaks from little acorns grow. A big bomb can be set off by a very tiny button. And then there are some problems we're going to encounter that we cannot fix. We need help beyond ourselves. Both of these points are made here in 2 Kings chapter 5. So let's go back to verse 1 and first get an idea of this Naaman that we're talking about. In the very first verse, we're told he is a commander of the army. He is the chief of staff. He is a 4-star general. And he's not just a stuffed suit. Lincoln had some generals who didn't do a whole lot. I was reading a letter the other day that Lincoln sent to one of his generals. And in the letter, he tells him essentially, you know, I've not seen you do a whole lot as a general, but others think you're a good general. So for now, I'm going to go with their recommendation. But from where I sit, you've not done a whole lot. Well, that wasn't the case with Naaman. He had a reputation in Syria. He was a great and honorable man in the eyes of his master. He had done a good job to the only one that counted, and that was the king. And he was a man of valor. He was a brave man. I don't think that Naaman probably led from a desk. He was probably out in front of his troops leading like a leader ought to be. There was an ancient tradition in Israel that Naaman was the archer back in 1 Kings who pulled the bow and let fly the arrow that struck Ahab, king of Israel, found the chink in the armor and killed him. And again, that's just a tradition, but I'd have no problem believing that Naaman was capable of that kind of valor. And so all of these great things are said about Naaman. And maybe the greatest thing in verse 1 is where it said that by him, the Lord had given victory to Syria. By him, God gave victory to Syria. God doesn't always use a Christian to do his will. There are times when God has a need for someone who's more than just a holy and pious individual. After Ahab was killed, God selects a general by the name of Jehu. Now, Jehu, who was no Bible beater, Jehu was no elder in the church. He was a fighting general. And that's who God needed at that time. There are times when God needs a soldier and not a saint. And God used this pagan, Naaman, as a means of judging and as a means of chastising his people, Israel. God does the same today. I don't think we've ever had a discussion when we needed the roof replaced on this building or when we needed lights installed. I don't remember anyone ever asking, well, let's make sure we get a Christian electrician or a Christian roofer. Now, there are times when we just need a roofer, an electrician, to come in and do the job. And God is the same way. And so God had used Naaman, but the very last word in verse 1 changes everything. The very last word is that he was a leper. as great as he was, as accomplished as he was, despite the fact he was a vessel of God, an instrument of God, Naaman was a leper, and that meant he lived his life under a cloud. The preacher Rantoul is a really fine man by the name of Wayne Chamberlain. Wayne is a great guy, I think. Wayne's got Parkinson's disease. He's had Parkinson's disease for a number of years. It was when my mother was in her last hospital stay. I remember talking with Wayne. He had come up to the hospital room, and Wayne was talking about some symptoms he had. And now I said, "Oh, don't worry about those. Those are nothing." Well, they were something. It's Parkinson's disease. And it's finally now gotten to the point where Wayne is retiring from preaching. He just can't do it any longer. And for the past, 8 years now, he's been doing his work. He's been teaching. He's been preaching privately, publicly. And to seem to be around him, you might not even suspect anything's wrong. He always would have a smile on his face. Ask how he's doing. He's doing fine. No, he's a sick man. And he has lived his life for the past 8 years or so under that cloud. Well, that's Naaman. Despite all of his success, has risen to the top of his profession. He was a leper. He was a man with a disease. And leprosy was a terrible disease. It was so terrible that when Matthew wants to talk about the power of Christ in Matthew chapter 8, the first miracle in the Gospel of Matthew that we read of Christ performing was of him cleansing a leper. And according to Luke, it was a man who was full of leprosy. It was an advanced case. Now, you can have different levels of leprosy, like you can have different levels of multiple sclerosis or Parkinson's disease. But Christ healed a man who was eaten up by it. And Naaman was bothered by it. He was a leper. And that brings us to the first point I'm wanting to make, that mighty oaks from little acorns grow. One of the things I always say in the radio program on Sunday morning is that we have classes for all ages. And what that means is we take into account the fact that a six-year-old may not be able to learn from the Bible at the level of a 16-year-old or a 36-year-old or a 60-year-old. So we have classes that gear the lesson down to the level of the student. We have classes for all ages. That's the challenge of a teacher. To adapt the story to the level of your student, to make it understandable, to get it to where they can reach it. Christ said, "Feed my sheep, not feed my giraffes." You've got to get it down there where people can reach it. And that goes for little people as well. And what a great story, what a great example for a teacher here in 2 Kings chapter 5. But the one who got this story started, the catalyst, was a little slave girl from Israel. That's verse 2. I mean, we go from verse 1 talking about a guy at the very top, commander of the army of Syria, to verse 2, a young girl who is at the very bottom. She was a captive from the land of Israel. She was a maid to Naaman's wife. Now, we're not told the name of this little girl. She may really have been enjoying her captivity. She was probably living in a mansion worthy of a four-star general. Four-star generals don't live in tents. They live in really fine homes. The finest house on Chinook Air Force Base was the house the general lived in. And as a maid in Israel, captured by the... I don't know what her home was like in Israel, but I bet it wasn't up to the standard of Naaman's home. So she may have been enjoying working in that house. There's certainly no evidence on her part of any bitterness. There's no insolence. She's not talking back to her mistress. In fact, she's very concerned about the situation in that home with the head of the home, Naaman, knowing that he was a leper. And yet God is going to use her as His prophet, as His evangelist in that situation for a great story to result. Tell little people, teachers, when you're teaching little folks, help them understand that despite their littleness, despite their inexperience, their lack of an awareness of the larger world, that they can be very important in bringing great blessing to someone. And all that she says is, I sure wish your husband was in Israel because there is someone there who can help. Now, she couldn't heal him of leprosy, but she knew someone who could help. Teach little children that, if nothing else, that there's one who can help, and that one is Jesus. I heard a story once about a little girl with her father, and she was looking at the famous Holman Hunt picture of Christ standing in front of a door, and the light is kind of on him. The door is shut, and he's getting ready to knock. And she's looking at that picture, and she asks her father, what does this picture mean? And the father, who was not a spiritual leader in his home, the mother and little girl went to church, but he didn't. The little girl says, Daddy, what does this mean? And he says, well, it means he's waiting for someone to let him in. It means he's knocking and no one yet has opened the door to let him in. And the little girl's just amazed by that. And she says to her daddy, well, if he came to our house and knocked on the door, we'd let him in, wouldn't we, Daddy? And that cut the father to the quick. The lesson his little daughter just taught him. Men, one of the first things God's wanting to know from us is, what kind of a leader were we spiritually to our spouse and to our children? That's one of the first things He's going to want to know. I feel so sorry for these women, wives, mothers, who are married to a fellow who is not a spiritual leader. If anybody goes to church, they're going to be the catalyst getting them there. If anyone is spiritually attuned, they're the one who are taking the... I feel so sorry for women married to husbands who have no appreciation for the responsibility God has given every man to be a leader in his marriage and in his home. But God can use the little people in the home. And He can use them very effectively if they can simply say, I know someone who can help. Whatever the spiritual problem is, I know someone who can help. Mighty things can come from that. And that's how this story kicks off. And so, the wife, you know, when you've got someone with Parkinson's, with MD, with MS, with leprosy, with cancer, you're looking for any ray of hope possible. And I'm sure Naaman had tried every cure that could have been tried up there in Syria. And then from this little girl comes news that there's someone in Israel who can help, and they jump on that. I've known people to pick up and fly to Mexico because they've heard of some cure they've got down there in Mexico for their cancer that they don't have up here. And so the wife lets Naaman know. Naaman lets his boss, the king, know. And the king so appreciates and values Naaman that he says, well, if there's someone in Israel who can help, we're getting you down to that doctor. We're sending you to the Mayo Clinic down there in Israel. And the king says, I'll write a letter. Not only will I write a letter to the king of Israel to make sure we take this right to the top, I don't want you to go down there and see a PA. I want you to see the top surgeon. And to make sure that happens, I'll write a letter to the king. And I'll pay him a king's ransom. The amount of money that Naaman took down to get this treatment was a king's ransom. King of Syria says, we're going to see you get the very best medical treatment available, Naaman. And so Naaman gets a contingent of soldiers, chariots, and they roll into Israel. And I'm not sure how the politics worked back in that day. I mean, Israel and Syria had been going at it. There were times Israel had the upper hand, times Syria had the upper hand. The king of Israel had just been killed not long before in battle against these Syrians. And yet the king of Syria felt that he could appeal to the king of Israel and the king of Israel would help. I'm not sure how all the politics worked out. But when the king of Israel reads the letter the king of Syria wrote, I'm sending you my top general. Yeah, the one who's been beating up on you folks. The one who's been taking captives out of Israel. I'm sending him to you because we hear you've got a doctor down there and we're willing to pay whatever it takes to get him healed. And when the king of Israel read that, he panicked. He said, looky here, the king of Syria is trying to pick another fight. Who does he think I am? I'm no doctor. I can't heal anybody. The little captive girl knew there was somebody in Israel who could help, but the king of Israel didn't. The king knew of Elisha, but so worldly was he didn't even realize what Elisha could do. And word spread. Word of mouth. And the word comes to Elisha that a Syrian general has showed up with leprosy, and Elisha gets word back to the king of Israel, send him to me. And I bet the king of Israel breathed a big sigh at being able to turn Naaman over to someone else. And so Naaman sets out for Elisha's clinic. You know, back then, to be a prophet meant you were also a magician, meant you were also a faith healer, you were a sorcerer. Pagan prophets were all of those things rolled up together. It's like going to the barber back in the Middle Ages to be bled because you got a headache. You know, they put a leech on you or they bleed you somehow. Barbers used to do that kind of stuff. And so it's no big surprise to Naaman that he's being sent to a prophet. And I can imagine that must have been quite a parade from Samaria, where the king of Israel was, to wherever Elisha was living. He had all these chariots, people along the way stopping and looking as this retinue rolled through. He was an important man, Naaman was. He was used to 21-gun salutes. He was used to 7 guns lined up, firing 3 times. 21-gun salutes. And he pulls up to Elisha's house, expecting all kind of fanfare and fuss because he was such an important man. And Elisha won't even go out to meet him. You see, God was not just wanting to cure Naaman of leprosy. He was wanting to cure Naaman of pride. And one of the first things Naaman has to learn is that he's just a nobody. You've got something you can't fix. It doesn't matter how much money, how much power, authority you've got. You can't fix it. And if you want the one who can fix it to fix it, you're going to have to show some humility. Elisha won't even go out to talk to him. And finally, Elisha sends a servant out. Servants are very prominent in this story. Little maid, servant. I know someone who can help. Now Elisha's servant. And comes out and says, if you want to be cured, go down to the Jordan, the not so big muddy, and wash 7 times and you'll be cleansed. 7 times, 7 days in the week. 7 times Israel marched around the city of Jericho. Leviticus 14, there was a 7-fold anointing of blood and water on the leper before he was pronounced clean. Go down and dip the perfect number of times, 7. and the seventh time you'll be clean. And Naaman then says something, and this is the only thing I agree with Naaman about, and I've already alluded to it. Naaman says, we've got better water in Syria than you've got here in Israel. Why can't I go back there and dip? And in saying that, there's an application to be made, because Naaman's reaction to what he was told to do is the reaction of so many in this world who think that there is something better for them than Christianity. The Eastern religions are better than Christianity. Hinduism, Buddhism, all of the silliness they've got back there, those Eastern religions are better than what we've got in the Judeo-Christian system. The cults, oh, they're the ones who know the secret. The cults, the Mormons, the Jehovah's Witnesses, the Christian Scientists, they're the ones who've discovered the secret. Or maybe some drug is the key. Back in the 60s, it was salvation by medication. LSD, some hallucinogenic that's going to take you into a deeper experience. Now, there's cleaner water to dip in than the Christian water. And just like Naaman thought there had to be something better than what Elisha was offering him, so people today think the same thing. And finally, Naaman was in a huff. He wasn't going to do what Elisha told him to do. And finally, one of his servants, again, it was a servant, said, listen, if it had been some big thing, you would have done it. If there was something that you could have pointed to and said, look what I've done. Look at the vitamins I've taken. Look at the rehab I've gone through. Look at the regimen that I've adopted. And I've gotten well as a result of what I've done. If there was something like that, you would have done it. And all that Elisha is telling you to do now is to go and dip in the Jordan River, and you won't do it? And give Naaman this much. He had some sense about him. He realized the wisdom of what his servant was saying. And he went and dipped seven times. And we'll end with what he did. You know, there was a message that was so revolutionary that it was shouted across the Roman Empire. And the message is that of Colossians 1, verse 4. We have redemption through His blood, even the forgiveness of sins. We have redemption not in the Eastern religions. If the Eastern religions are so great, why haven't they helped India? Why haven't they helped Pakistan? Why is Afghanistan the mess it is, if those Eastern religions are so great? You know, physician, heal thyself. We have redemption in the cross. The cross is the biggest muddy of them all. The blood of Christ is that which men resist and that which they oppose. And there's a prophet, God has spoken to us by His Son, the last prophet. And it's in His blood that we can find redemption. And you know what Naaman did? He did what we're told to do. Look at 2 Kings chapter 5, verse 14. So Naaman went down, and here's what the Greek text says. He went down and was baptized seven times in the Jordan. The King James says he went down and dipped. He went completely under. He was immersed. He did it seven times. We just have to do it once. If you want to be cleansed, Elisha says, send him to me so he'll know there's a prophet of God in Israel. The prophet of God, who's Jesus Christ, has come and said, if you want to be cleansed, I'll tell you how. You be dipped into my blood, and you'll come forth clean. That's what happened with Naaman. His skin was like the skin of a child. The leprosy was all gone. If you want to get rid of your guilt, if you want to get rid of any cloud that's hanging over your head right now, if you want to have your innocence restored to you, if you want to be able to sleep tonight like a four-year-old because you got a clear conscience, then you come to the big muddy. You come to the cross. You come to the blood of Christ. And you be baptized for the forgiveness of sins. Don't let that part of Naaman's story escape you. Make sure you see the importance of that part of Naaman in humility, submitting himself to the Word of God and being baptized.